Welcome to the Island Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, as Tara Reed says, actually, someone said to Tara Reed, "Hey, Tara, I'm on my way to work. It's an early morning and really dark outside." Tara retweeted and said, "Stay warm, bring a flashlight." How's it going?
You know, I kind of want to see some sort of award show hosted by Tara and Ricky Rubio.
Yes.
You know, like, take a coat, bring a flashlight. What's the face line that Ricky had?
Change your face, be happy.
Change your face, be happy. They have so much to give to teach us.
They really do. It's life lessons. I was going to go with a different one, but it has a picture, so you got to kind of see it. But it's she tagged hashtag Sharknado get ready ... hashtag Sharknado 2. And then it's a picture of her under a danger risk of shark attack sign.
At least she's milking it, man. I'm glad she's getting paid. I'm just glad.
She should milk that all day long.
So we have a lot to get to do. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's talk about Kobe.
Let's talk about Kobe. That's a good way to start.
Yeah, he's medically cleared. No restrictions. Fully medically cleared. So they have this entire week off until Friday when there is a nationally televised game against the Golden State Warriors. Kind of feel like he's back Friday.
I'm surprised that he's not like trying to change the schedule.
Like, really, we can't get the Bobcats in here on a nationally televised game?
Call on the league. Are you sure? Call Sam Hinkie, because I'm pretty sure Sam would be willing to fly out for another loss. Sam would do it.
We'll throw in a draft pick.
Well, yeah, so now we just have to wait and see, you know, how long until this, selfish, lazy, weak person is willing to get back on the floor, you know. We just don't know.
Are we talking about Chris Kaman? I thought he was out there.
And they could use him because that team is not good.
They're not bad, though.
They're pretty bad.
I don't know. They're scrappy, I would say.
They try hard.
They try hard, and sometimes that try hard works.
Yeah, it works early in the season.
Well, I mean, we can't see if it works later in the season yet.
That's true. It's not going to, but...
But Kobe's back.
Yeah, we'll see. This is actually going to be really interesting because, you know, how much is he going to be willing to do on the Achilles? But if he's able to come back at the point that he wants to... We haven't seen 2006 Kobe for a while. Oh, I'm pretty excited about 2006, 2007 Kobe coming back.
Yeah, I mean, the athleticism won't be there, but maybe the mindset will be there.
Like he really did. He made a concentrated effort in 2009 after the loss in 2008 to be more of a playmaker, to work more in the offense. And really from 2009 to 2000 and I'd even say last year, as much as it was a disaster year, that to me is really Kobe's peak because that was when he was playing the best overall basketball. It wasn't his best scoring years, but to me that was when he was really at his best in terms of a complete basketball player.
And he really was so good last year.
Yeah, and he worked in the flow of the offense. That's why people were surprised because they expected me to crap on him because of his defense and various things. And I'm like, no, he's doing what he needs to offensively. That's really all I want from him is work within the flow of the offense and make good decisions and don't freelance and take terrible shots. If you don't take terrible shots, it goes a long way with me.
And I think
taking terrible shots goes a long. I would rather that you not shoot at all than take a terrible shot. I know that goes against the concept of shots aren't turnovers, but
the thing for me is I think that people do get hung up on his defense. I have a problem with his defense when he's getting awarded for it,
right?
But when the decision is okay, I can try on defense and then be pretty good on offense, or I can be great on offense and really, you know, just pick my spots defensively, I would much rather the latter.
Yeah, and actually, let's talk about this for a second, because this is something that I've actually, you know, I'm big on defense.
You are. You love it.
It's like one of my favorite things in the entire world. It was the only thing that I was passively not horrible at basketball.
Okay.
It remains the only thing that I'm not completely terrible at. Once again, I'm considered an expert in basketball. Let's just point that out. Sidebar, it pains me whenever CBS uses that. Like, we're doing these videos every day for daily picks, and they're like, "You're expert picks." And I'm like, don't call me that. Don't call me. Like, I'm the guy that Charles Barkley's making fun of.
Right.
Because you're calling me that. Don't call me that. I'm a guy that talks about basketball. I don't know if I'm talking about it knowledgeably. I just talk about it a lot.
How about your basketball connoisseur?
I don't even think that's true because I like lots of bad basketball.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Al Thornton alone.
I'm just a basketball glutton, maybe?
Glutton is good, yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Basketball obsessive?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
A basketball stalker?
Considering Tom Zeller described me as, quote, a maniac, that I think that's probably accurate.
Yeah,
although I'm not sure that was related to my basketball stuff. Anyway, so I want to talk about this. I love defense. But my problem with it is if you are a great offensive player and you are bad defensively, that doesn't make you a bad NBA player. I appreciate that we live in a time when the NBA, when we have more information to judge players and players are judged more accurately on these things. I would rather simply celebrate the players that are good on both sides of the ball. And if you want to lift them up as higher, like if you want to say right now Paul George is better than Carmelo Anthony, I'm probably going to agree with you because of the way that George is playing this year and the fact that he's so good on both sides of the ball. I want to reward Paul George for that. I don't want to dock Melo because he's not good at defense. You have to spend a certain amount of energy on the floor. You only have a finite amount of energy, and you have to choose where you spend it. And if you spend it all on defense, odds are you're going to make some bad decisions offensively. That's how you get Tony Allen.
Right. Who kicked somebody in the face last night.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get to that. But you shouldn't be punished because you choose to spend your efforts on offense, especially if you're good at it. Like, I spend a lot of my time writing about the things that I'm good at writing about, and I don't do in-depth play breakdowns. And I do some video stuff, but I always try and be like, oh, this decision here was bad, or tendencies versus – oh, let's just pick a random play, Zach. Horns. And talking about horns all the time.
Right.
Because I'm not strong in talking about play sets.
Right.
Right? I could do it.
Yeah.
I picked up enough from talking to assistant coaches. I've read books.
There are enough, like, how to coach JV basketball to pick up, like, the terminology. And then you throw out the terminology and it's like, hey, look how much I know.
Yeah. Like, I could do that, but that's not really my strength. My strength in reality is making fun of people.
Right.
That's where my strength lies. So I choose to spend my time on that. Just because I don't have that other background, it doesn't mean that there's lots of reasons why I'm not that great of a writer, but that doesn't happen to be one of it, you know? So, and that's kind of where I end up thinking about it. It's also, I mean, it works in any profession. You have to choose where you spend your energy.
Yeah.
It works in life. Like, if you choose to spend time with your relationship, your work is going to have less, you're going to have less time to spend on your career, which is going to impact that, and you're going to have less time to spend on your personal pursuits. Likewise, if you spend all your time at work, your relationships are going to suffer. You have to choose these things, and the same thing exists on the court. You got a finite amount of energy.
I think the important thing too is that there are roles that guys are supposed to succeed in, and James Harden is out there. I think Kevin Kale would love for James Harden to play defense. I think he also doesn't expect it. I think he wants him to be relatively in position and be ready to you know, shove the ball down the throat of the opponent once they get it. But James Harden's job is to go out there and be an offensive juggernaut that just obliterates the competition. If he would, you know, drop in to help and not, like, have his back to everything that's going on the floor, Kevin McHale will take that in a second. But I don't think he expects that. And I think that there are a lot of coaches that know, all right, I know what I can get out of my player. Now, it puts the onus on them for guys like Carmelo, guys like Kobe Bryant at this stage in his career, because he used to be a great defender, and guys like James Harden, to where, all right, if you're not going to be a consistent defender, you have to be great on offense. And I think most of the time they are. Now, there are plenty of games where Carmelo takes bad shots and we walk away thinking, oh, I can't believe this guy's a superstar, and blah, 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 and all that crap. I was using the royal we. Not myself included in particular, because I love that stuff, but I think that it puts the onus on them to be great offensive players all the time. But if they can carry that out, I don't know, 85, 90% of the time, that's them doing their job. It doesn't absolve them from playing defense, but it also doesn't mean that, you know, they're killing their team because of this. They have specific jobs to do. I'm not out there organizing stuff for CBS because I'm not good at organizing stuff. Like, if that was part of my job for CBS, then I would be terrible at my job. I'm just mediocre right now, and I'm good with that.
And I get annoyed also at the flip side of it, really, because we've honestly gotten to a point where if you're an exceptional defender, you're excused for everything else that you do.
Right.
And that bugs the crap out of me. Like, I've become fine with Tony Allen because Tony really has shifted. He used to take the ball and want to create offense on his own.
Yeah.
And that was a disaster. That was where I started making Twitter jokes about the Tony Allen ISO project, because to me, whenever I watched him, it was like in his head he would get the ball and this funk band would just start warming up because he just wanted to be
sure.
He wanted to create this amazing, you know, he really thought he was an isolation player that could create off the dribble. But now it's really just he leaks out, he makes plays in transition, he makes good cuts, and he does the little things. I'm actually fine with Tony Allen. But there was a time when he did way too much of that stuff, and that was a detriment to the team. And if you're hurting your team on offense, that's just as bad as hurting your team on defense. You've got to have a balance there. If you make consistently bad, not just missing shots is one. If you're taking shots that you can't reliably hit, and you're taking a lot of them, that's really bad. That's why I get so worked up over the more shots than points thing. Like, I focus on guys that take a lot of shots and don't make enough and don't score enough. It's not like I'm bothered if you take four shots to score 2 points. It's like, okay, you hit one of four. That's not great, but you didn't. It's four shots. It's fine. You can get four shots in a game,
right,
if you're playing. But taking 25 shots and hitting eight, okay, at some point, maybe it's not your night.
I do. I will say this: there are certain guys that are so good that a lot of coaches are fine with, go ahead and take that next shot. And they tell them that. They encourage that because confidence is so big in it. And now maybe they should adjust and take a different type of shot. But just because you're 8 for 24 on a night doesn't mean you shouldn't be taking that 25th shot. There is a very big psychological component to it. And these guys are so ridiculously talented at this stage that they probably should be taking that shot. They should just be taking a better shot, but they should still be shooting.
And this is the key with the NBA, because the NBA enables the player to make independent decisions versus baseball. You only have a set number of decisions that you can make, right?
Like, right.
You can only do so many things. And in football, you rely entirely on the offensive play calling. Like, right. If you're the quarterback, you can audible, right? The quarterback has the most decision making. That's why it's the most important position. But in basketball, everybody has some level of control because everybody's got to touch the ball a couple times, at least a couple times. My thing is this: let's say that you're a premier scorer and you start off the game and you're 3 of 12.
Okay.
The coach needs to tell you, let's get you some better looks. Let's get you going off ball. Let's get some cuts. Like, let's find some ways to get some easy buckets to get you going, not just to improve the number, but so that you're in more rhythm and you're getting better opportunities, and then maybe you can work yourself back into the kind of things that you want to do.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily think that just taking the same shots over and over again is a good approach.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that I actually think that's more of a rare occurrence than we think. Like for Carmelo, for example, he can get stuck in that, you know, oh, let me just take a two dribble pull up 18 footer. And he can do that quite a bit. But I actually think he does vary it up enough where he'll throw himself into the post a little bit. He'll take a three. He'll take a pull-up jumper. He'll drive a little bit. Like, I think his volume shooting is maybe more overblown. Now, with him, people freak out because he doesn't pass enough. But I don't know. I like the way he attacks a defense for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, we've been down this before. I disagree. I think that what he tends to do with me is, to me, he will do two plays where he posts up, gets really aggressive, and does a great job. And then for some reason he thinks, I made these last two baskets, so I'm hot. And then he starts going more, and he just wants to cook. He always wants to cook.
Because when he cooks, it's usually unstoppable. When he's not on a Knicks team that is mired in Andrea Bargnani being a key factor, like, that cooking actually matters.
Right, but like, sometimes just chop some salad, you know?
No,
like,
here's the thing, you can't cook unless you turn on the oven.
Yeah.
You gotta turn on the burners.
It's tough. You know what else is tough?
I'm just gonna start grunting at you when you ask me a question.
I don't have a transition. I fail. I do want to talk about this really messed up thing with the MBPA.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
Speaking of cooking the books.
Oh, well done.
Yeah, how about that?
God, you're so good at
that.
This.
That was sexual.
Okay, so in general, the MBPA stuff people don't care about, and right. I understand why they don't care about it, and to truth be told, I don't really give a damn either. But I find this story to be really fascinating because of what I've seen of the player dynamics involved and how the players approach it and what's going on. So AP report over the weekend, and we brought it to you yesterday on Ion Basketball. Let's go back. Billy Hunter is executive director of the MBPA for years and years and years and years and years. He has amassed a ton of power, and the players basically give him free reign for whatever reason. They trust him, and he's got the ability to do whatever he wants. He brings on his daughters to work in the office. They're working in the MBPA office, and he strikes a deal with an investment firm called Prim Capital, which is chaired by his son. You can question whether this is a good thing or a bad thing or whether this is completely improper. Most companies are going to tell you that's completely improper. But the MBPA is not really most companies. Over the weekend or last week, the founder of this Prim Capital company pled guilty to willfully defrauding the MBPA and their dealings with them of over $3 million. By forging the signature of a deceased MBPA legal counsel.
I've actually seen this movie. Does it have Jason Lee in it?
I was in a locker room last year, and they started talking about what was going on with Billy Hunter. And I was just kind of hanging back. It was one of those, you walk in the locker room and you're trying to decide who do you want to talk to? And so I was just kind of hanging back. And a player that's very involved with the union and is very up on these matters and is very intelligent was trying to explain it to someone who isn't.
Let's just say isn't. Yeah.
Let's just say isn't. But he does value honesty a lot. He wears honesty on his neck. That's how much he likes honesty.
Okay.
And he's trying to explain to him what happened, and it was hilarious because several players clearly had not been paying attention, and their heads kind of perked up because this other player said, well, he basically cost us $500,000 just in this particular instance by paying for this one thing. And they went, wait, $500,000? And he said, yeah, my money. Well, our money, but yeah. And so it's amazing to me because basically the MBPA has been being fleeced over the last 10 years in various ways by – and I'm sure Hunter didn't – I don't think Hunter necessarily had bad intentions. I don't think he's not like a supervillain, right? He's not like, ha, 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 I will defraud these players.
I don't know. I mean, that's hard to say, but I wouldn't just assume the best with him.
I'm not assuming the best. I'm saying that – well, let me put it this way. He abused power. There's a difference between abusing power and then willfully being like, I'm going to take this position and then like steal all of their money. It's not like he doesn't have blueprints. He doesn't, you know,
he might
have a laugh.
We don't know that. We haven't checked his house. He might have blueprints.
That's true. He could have a lair.
Yeah.
That's possible.
He's probably siphoned enough money to build a lair. A really nice
That's
one.
That's true. And so I have two thoughts. One is, you know, man, the players really got robbed of a lot of money, and a lot of the ex-players need this money, you know, for the long-term pension stuff. And then the other part of it, I think, is, man, how easy is it – if you're the league dealing with them in these lockout negotiations and you see all this stuff going on, no wonder they completely kicked their ass in the lockout.
Right.
Like, no wonder.
Right. That's the thing is we had so many people like, oh, the league is so evil, the owners are so evil. If I'm the owners and I'm looking at this guy across the table from me, and you're in that world, like, you know that certain stuff's going on, I would just be laughing every time he brought up a point to negotiate. I would just be laughing. I worked in a court system in California for a couple of years, and I didn't learn a whole lot, but one thing I definitely learned, the phrase willfully defrauding, never a good thing to be a part of.
Never, never quality.
No, that's tough.
I also, by the way, do find it pretty amazing that this guy that has pled guilty is 72 years old.
Yeah, when you're still doing this in your 70s,
you gotta kind of you kind of have to respect it.
Sure, I mean he's clearly got to have something cooking in terms of like a minimum security prison, right? I would imagine that he's got a setup coming for him. He probably has a jacuzzi in his cell.
I mean, he's still working that game at 72 years old. That's pretty good. I just imagine though Billy Hunter as basically being Henry Winkler in Arrested Development.
Sure.
Like, oh no, this is gonna cost you guys a lot of money. Bad news is gonna cost you guys a lot of money. What's the good news? Oh, I can see how you'd expect there to be good news. There's not. This is gonna cost you a lot of money. Like, they're in the meetings and David Stern's looking at him and like, Billy, we need to resolve this. And Billy's like stuffing bagels into his pockets.
It's just like Adam Silver's like, you know, Billy, we're really interested in a hard cap, and he just looks at the paper and goes, those are balls.
So yeah, it's a good thing that Paul's in charge, and you hope that Chris Paul is going to be able to bring them some better leadership. I mean, I don't know. I guess if you're a fan, do you? Isn't it better for you if they just get their asses kicked so it's over quicker?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on how much you care about the player in terms of like getting fair market value or something. I mean, most fans get mad when players make a lot of money.
It's weird. Well, I think there's the backlash is also interesting because the basketball intelligentsia tends to – they're so pro-player that it becomes this moral crusade.
Yeah, it's like this – it's that's the thing I've never liked about the whole lockout negotiation thing is it's always – it just seems to be this real like challenge authority above anything. And it's like sometimes the owners are just right. I'm not saying they're always right, but sometimes they're just like, that's what you do as a business owner.
Well, and I guess for me is I've become, I guess I'm a little bit more pragmatic about it, where my thought is more, look, if I want to be outraged over stuff, like I can be outraged professionally and do stuff because it's like, well, I care about basketball, so I'll be outraged about this. But in general, from a moral standpoint, I'm probably going to save that stuff for, you know, workers that are getting screwed over in small developing countries.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you can't have room for both.
There's plenty of ire to go around.
Yeah, and I get that. It just seems weird to me to be like, you know, because part of me is always like, you know, they still do well enough. I mean, both sides is my problem is I'm always like, guys, there's enough money here. Like, this really shouldn't be this hard.
Yeah,
there's enough money here. And you know, I'm like anybody else. When I make a good living, and yet I'm always like, man, I really need to make more, but. There's also a point where I very much am like, well, no, I do okay. Like, I don't really need to – I'm never going to be looking to be, like, a really high-rolling guy. Like, some guys in the media industry make tons of money, and I can't imagine it.
That's exactly what I'm going for.
I'm sure it is. You want to not work at all, say whatever you want, and then get paid a ton of money. You want to be a national columnist. That's basically what it comes down to.
Yeah, no, that actually sounds great. Sign me up.
You know what sounds great?
Hmm.
Kevin Garnett opening up going 6 of 6.
I watched the start of that game. KG was fantastic. He's hitting jumpers. Everything was in the flow. He had a step back jumper against LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, it was fantastic.
He must have felt so good.
Oh, I felt great. I felt so great that I played my own game of basketball last night. And then came back. I saw an email in our CBS email thread of, you know, Damian Lillard hits this amazing shot, and I was like, "Oh right, I should see how that, I should see how the game ended up." And I go and check some scores on my phone, and my God, the Nets have lost by 10. And I'm like, "What happened? They were killing when I was watching." And obviously, it's a game of runs. I only watched the first quarter, but geez, that Nets team, they really know how to treat the fans.
Everyone, treat yourself. Everyone. In these situations wants to make it one thing or the other. Either team A beat itself or is terrible, or team B was really good, and there's no – it can't be both. And that was the situation last night. You and I said yesterday, we talked about the Blazers, and we talked about how consistent they are with their offensive attack of always looking to get a good shot.
Yep.
Last night was very vindicating for me because it was the Blazers consistently worked for a good shot against a pretty crappy defense, and eventually it worked out for them.
Yep.
Like – just over, and it was really, and you could just tell too. The Brooklyn crowd was like, oh no. No, 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 no. Like, they just knew it was coming. It got, like, when it was within two, everyone was like, here we go.
And I mean, to be fair, the Nets are playing without Deron Williams, without Brook Lopez, without Andre Kirilenko. So they're, you know, that's a pretty, at least, even Kirilenko hasn't been good this year, but at least the Deron Williams, Brook Lopez thing, like, that's a significant chunk of their offensive focus, right? So it's understandable. It just, everything was clicking, and then
that's like,
and then
that's
nothing
like 30,
clicked.
That's like $31 million US, and then like five fiefdoms in Russia.
Right, exactly.
It's missing. So,
Paul Pierce. It's not good.
Not very truthful.
No. The truth is hidden somewhere. I believe the X-Files. I believe the truth is out there. It's not in Brooklyn.
I believe the truth hurts. That's
okay, yeah, the truth is definitely hurting.
Yeah, Garnett hit those six shots and then hit one. I think it was the next 10.
Sounds about right.
And you asked what happened, and I responded with a picture of the scene from Weekend at Bernie's when he falls off the boat.
Right. I did... Wes Matthews is stupid on fire right now. He's a lot of fun to watch.
I did a screenshot capture last night. Jason Terry got so excited to go help and thought that there was no way that Damian Lillard was going to make the ball reversal cross-court pass.
Because Jason Terry would never make that pass.
Right. And Lillard got up over two pretty good defenders and whipped it across, and Matthews had just sunk a little bit deep, and then Jason Terry turned around and was like, hey, where'd you go? Hey, come back here. Matthews catches it. There's not a soul in sight and drains it. I've actually really never been all that big on Wesley Matthews after his rookie season. I thought that his decision making was kind of questionable and thought that he was just kind of overrated. He's been just fantastic. He's so good right
now.
Yeah,
he's really good. He's a really solid defender, which I like about him, and then he's just shooting the lights out this year.
So the Nets are in trouble. Held the you're 3-7. You know what time it is. Players only meeting.
Oh, players only meeting. Let's do it.
Players only meeting, and then after the players only meeting, we're all going to not talk to the media.
I assume Prokhorov has a check for Dion Waiters to come in and punch somebody in the face, right? I'm only going to do that joke 10 more times this season, and then it'll never be uttered again. So
he denied, by the way. We should say that because people were asking about it on the podcast. Waiters laughed it off and denied that that's what happened. And all the beat writers, from what they've talked to, seem to agree that that is not what happened. So we talked about yesterday's possibility. Sounds like Waiters did not punch Kyrie Irving in the face. So good news, Cavs.
Yeah, and I mean, Brewer really did hammer the hell out of him.
Yeah. Although somebody pointed out to me, a Cavs fan did point out to me yesterday that x-rays were negative for Kyrie at halftime of that game. And then all of a sudden he comes back and he had a broken nose. So apparently the x-rays were not as conclusive as you may have thought, or the fracture was really small, whichever way. Anyway, so they have the players only meeting, and then I will say this, there's a couple ways that players only meetings can go, and the way that you want it is everybody has a players only meeting, and then afterwards guys are like, okay, I feel better, we aired some stuff, we're gonna get through this. And the way that the Nets reporters are reporting it is basically it was not so much like that as more, you know how after you have a huge blow up at your family's house for Thanksgiving and then everyone just kind of sits around in awkward silence for a while because of your family and you're stuck there? Yeah. That's more what it was like.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Also, by the way, guys, if you're gonna keep the media, I gotta say this. A couple of reasons why you should do this. I think it's okay if you don't want to talk to the media every night. That's fine.
Sure.
And it's okay if this was a night when you're just like, I really struggled and I don't feel like it. I understand that. I really do. I think if you were a part of a pivotal play, you probably should, or if you're an all-star, you probably just need to go ahead and do that. But in general, I'm okay with the night. You can't all take off on the same night when you make the media wait outside for 40 minutes.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was apparently like an hour-long wait before they found out that KG and Paul Pierce weren't going to talk.
Yeah.
Let them know before that. You can absolutely let them know.
People are going to say, like, oh, the media, like, oh, it's so hard on you to wait. I'm like, how would you feel if somebody really was at your job, made you wait 45 minutes to an hour for a meeting and just wasted your time, which is, and we're talking like 5 o'clock, like the end of your day, and you're stuck there till six. It's just rude.
It is. And it's avoidable too.
Yeah.
And it could be like, hey, you know what? Maybe I'll talk about it at shoot around tomorrow, but just not in the mood tonight. And you let them know. And it's fine. Some media members would still be pissed off, but whatever. Like, that's at least communicating.
Yeah. At least you're not. That's my thing. Is I'm just like, have some respect for the fact that these are human beings.
Right.
That's
all. You didn't come do your job.
It's hard for players because they don't consider us human. But
you didn't come do your job tonight, but they're still trying to do their job.
you know who did do his job last night?
Who?
Zach Randolph.
He did a job.
Beasted.
He's so fun to watch when he's good because it's just all of these weird angles that he puts shots up.
Yeah,
and they go in because he's got this amazing touch around the basket. He's fun to watch when he's on.
I feel bad for the Clippers because they just, you know, and Doc found out the same thing that Vinny Del Negro found out, which is you don't have anyone that can guard him. Blake's not nearly strong enough, and DeAndre is not nearly fast enough. Just nothing you can do. You can't do. You can double, and that's it. And that's honestly the plan. And most nights that's going to work. The Grizzlies were hitting shots last night. That's part of it. Now, the Clippers' defense continues to be a big rut-row. But in general, Mike Conley's pretty on fire right now. He's hitting some pretty sick stuff.
For sure. Also, Chris Paul and J.J. Redick combined for 8 for 27. Not going to happen that often. Now, the Grizzlies did play good defense. It's not to take anything away from them, but that's not likely to happen most games.
I will say that they played really smart though, because with Redick, they basically were the Grizzlies did what you should do, which is
not leave him.
They did this to the Warriors too, which is no, you're not going to shoot threes. We have interior defenders. Yeah. That's fine. Like if you make a leaning sideways layup over Marc Gasol or Kostas Koufos, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, you're not getting wide open threes.
Right.
That is not where you're going to hurt us. And when that happened, the Clippers' offense is kind of like, and then, you know, it's funny, same thing that happened last year, even with the new additions, it came down to the same thing, which is, oh, Matt Barnes is open. And the Grizzlies are like, cool. That's a cool story.
He certainly is. Maybe you should get the ball to him.
He certainly is. We support this. Let's see what else happened last night. Steph Curry almost died.
Yeah, Marvin Williams just fell on his head.
Marcus Thompson of the San Jose Mercury News believes that that was intentional.
I only saw it in GIF form. I'm not saying GIF anymore. I'm saying GIF. Screw that.
That's apparently what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm done with this. Oh, it's supposed to be GIF. Shut up. In GIF form, I saw it. It didn't look intentional to me, but, you know, you never know with those things. I just think, like, that would be a weird decision to make if you're Marvin Williams, right?
It's also, it's like, it's Marvin Williams. Like, are you really like, oh, man, you know, that hitman, Marvin Williams.
Yeah. Well, he, like, leveled Rondo years ago, right?
Yeah.
Because some Celtics fan tweeted me something like, as if you didn't need more reasons to hate Marvin Williams. I was like, wait, why do people hate Marvin Williams? And it took me a good 20 minutes before I remembered the whole Rondo thing.
If you're Jazz or Hawks fans, you should hate Marvin Williams.
Yes, absolutely.
Other than that, don't really understand that so much. And Curry still had 22 and 6 and 8.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he's pretty good. Warrior, I mean, that was nothing more to be said about that game because they're good. I'm glad that Curry's okay because it was pretty scary, but he's fine.
Yeah, that was really, really bad.
The Bobcats covered, which I consider to be a win.
Sure. I haven't watched that game yet. I've caught up on most everything else. And
Have you seen the Gerald Henderson play?
I did see that. I saw that when you tweeted out the link. That was fantastic.
And did you see the Jeff Adrian play?
No, I couldn't get to load on my phone. I forgot to look at it when I got home.
Oh, God, you have to go see it. It's amazing.
I can see that.
It's amazing. I like this Bobcats team. I do, and they're going to turn to crap next month. But for right now,
They're kind of crap right now.
The November Bobcats are just really fun to watch.
Yeah, every year.
Henderson was fantastic. Kemba played really well. They're without Al Jefferson.
Wait, Kemba played well?
Adrian was a man.
Kemba was 3 for 14.
Yeah, he still played pretty well. Okay. I felt like he just, no turnovers.
All right.
The shooting, by the way, I gotta say this, I really do believe there's very clearly, because he was like on fire, and then he had, I don't remember what injury he had, but he got, I think it was a shoulder. He suffered an injury, and since then he's been crap. He just can't shoot.
Yeah, the shoulder injuries will do that.
Raymond Felton is in the same boat, where I've been wondering why and what in the hell is wrong with Raymond Felton, because whatever you think about Raymond Felton, like, he's not that bad. He's a pretty good overall NBA player. He's not a guy that just misses a lot of shots. He doesn't take a ton of them,
right?
And he doesn't miss that many. He's not great. He's not a crack shooter. He's not Klay Thompson, but he's decent. And he's horrible. It turns out he's got a pinched nerve in his hip.
Oh yeah, that'll do it.
And that'll do it. Like, he's got that plus a hamstring, you know, because what New York really needed was more trouble.
Right.
Luol Deng was fantastic last night. The Bulls kind of won because they're just a better team overall. But I don't know. I really like this Bobcats team. They played really hard. And somebody asked me what's the difference between this year and last year. And the real answer is I can't say, because we're going to have to, you know, if they fall apart next month, then it's, well, nothing.
Yeah.
But if you ask me right now to make a guess, if there is something, it's that they looked a lot more disciplined.
Yeah.
Like, they don't get down, and they don't really fall apart very often. They kind of stick with it. Like, there were times last night, I think the league got to like 10 or 11, and the Bobcats were just like, nope, just stick to what you do. Just keep doing what we do, and we'll be fine. Denver-Oklahoma City was a fun game.
68 points from Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. That's a lot.
Shots.
That's a lot.
They were really good. You know, and that's going to be the model. Like, that's what they're going to have to do. This is going to be exhausting year for those two. They're going to be really tired.
Yeah.
I was impressed with Denver. Denver led the entire game and then let up, and so you kind of want to be like, oh, they choked or whatever, but I'm more like, man, they had a lead on the road in Oklahoma City without, you know, they're shorthanded and banged up and not very good. And that was,
yeah.
J.J. Hickson's played really well.
He was really good. Lawson was awesome.
Ty Lawson's been really great.
Yeah.
They had I think Wilson Chandler had a better night. Wilson Chandler always plays badly against the Thunder, and I don't know why. Just never plays well. Maybe it's just KD.
Yeah.
He tends to own him. I'm writing this up for EOB later. Did you hear about Joe Dumars and Jennings?
No.
Joe Dumars, Brandon Jennings, quote, "That's one thing me and Joe talked about. That was my first problem in the beginning when I came back, trying to please everybody, trying to make sure I was being a pass-first point guard instead of just playing basketball. But, like, tonight, I just got to play basketball. If the shot's there, I'm going to take it. If not, then I'm going to pass it." Joe Dumars told him to shoot more.
Oh, my God. That's – all right, now the Pistons are appointment viewing for the next 2 weeks. Oh, I'm excited.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's
– I mean, it was literally months ago that Brandon Jennings said – yeah, I'm just getting back to AAU ball. I'm going to pass, blah, blah, blah. I've got Lob City and Detroit here, and I'm glad to see that lasted.
Before we do tonight's games, what about Tony Allen's face kick?
I actually didn't like the ejection. I get why they did it. I understand it. You can't – I think that with a situation like that, with the history of those teams, I think even something as – I actually think it was an innocent kick. I think something like that, you can't risk that it's going to get out of hand. Like, all it takes is one player on the Clippers freaking out that Tony Allen didn't get his comeuppance, you know, after kicking Chris Paul in the face, and then you've got a potential brawl on your hands. So I get, like, the decision, all right, you kicked him in the face, you can't do that, that's, you know, you got flagrant two, you're out of the game. I get that. But I just thought it looked like he thought Chris Paul was going to pass the ball. And so he tried to get his foot in the way of a pass, and just – he Tony Allen'd it, and he went too hard, and it ended up kicking him in the face.
I have to agree with their decision to eject him, because I always preached that recklessness is as dangerous as intentional harm.
Sure.
And so by the letter of the law, in order to be consistent, I feel it necessary for me to take the stance of that was reckless, and so he deserved to be tossed. So – if they hadn't tossed him, I would have been like, well, it wasn't intentional. He wasn't trying to kick him in the face. How can I put this? Grizzlies fans bug me with how much they hate Chris Paul. It's just – it's too much. There should be more respect there, and instead it's just vitriol because of the flopping thing. It's like, the flopping thing, therefore it makes everything okay. And I'm like, hate Chris Paul because he's really good.
Yeah.
Like, have a healthy respect for him.
Yeah.
Versus, like, and it's like,
it doesn't,
you know,
it doesn't mean you have to cheer for him. Just yeah. recognize that he's as good as he is.
Yeah. And also, you know, no, nobody needs to get kicked in the face. That just doesn't need to happen. Like, they could, you know, luckily Chris is okay, but anything that involves the face or the head, I get really nervous about. I just get really terrified. We know I talked about this before. After reading the shot, everything out after reading the punch by Feinstein, I'm just like, nope, no one gets hit in the face in basketball. Doesn't need to happen. Nope. Rudy Tomjanovich almost died. No one needs to get hit in the face. It was reckless, but it wasn't that bad, and it was fine. I will say I kind of disagree with the idea of you know, like, oh, we need to make sure that we keep this in check, because part of me is kind of like, what are the Clippers going to do? Like,
all it takes is one fake tough guy in Matt Barnes to incite something.
Yeah, but then, like, I just feel like Matt Barnes would be like, goes nuts, and then Zebo like looks at him and he's, oh, okay.
I don't think you risk it.
Yeah, so it was fine. And if that had cost the Grizzlies the game, I would have been fine with it too. Like, it's, this stuff happens.
Yeah.
So you want to do games for tonight?
Let's do games for tonight.
All right. Last night, I went 3-3. You went 2-4 because you didn't trust the kitties.
Oh, God forbid.
Hey, I'm just telling you. You need to get on the bandwagon.
God forbid I didn't.
You need to get on the bandwagon of the Bobcats being able to cover every now and again.
Yeah.
So you're 27-36-1 going into the night.
Hey.
And I'm 79-82-4.
Okay.
No, 79. That's wrong. I am 79-72.
Okay.
7 games over 500 still. Your Timberwolves are in Washington. This one feels like a trap. Let's play guess the line.
In Washington?
Yeah.
I would say the Timberwolves are probably favored by 4.5.
Ooh, really close. Good job. It's 4.
Oh. Look at me. Look out, Cousin Sal.
Yeah, it's nice. it's 4. I'm a little surprised. I would have pegged it at 6.5.
No, that's too many points for the Wizards to get at home.
The Wizards are not good.
I still think it's a pretty close game. I would take the Wolves and lay the points. I think it's like a 5 or 6 point win.
Okay. I don't know. I don't feel like... I guess I just feel like the Wizards are finding ways to lose right now, and that's never a good thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They're finding ways to lose. And also, it's one where 4 is so low, you know, 3-point ball game, the Wizards, like Beal or Webster, misses a 3, and then they have to foul 2 free throws, 5, and then they run out the clock.
Sure.
You know? Detroit hosts your New York Knickerbockers.
I can't imagine. The Knicks can't be favored, right?
They are not. What do you think? Guess it.
Pistons by 5?
Again, close. It's 4.
Oh, they're all 4.
It's 4 again. I like the Pistons here. The Pistons have not been good, but the Knicks are train wreck. Raymond Felton might be out. Meta World Peace is out. He has knee drained.
Yeah.
So Tyson Chandler, Raymond Felton, Meta World Peace. You're talking about a starting lineup of... And we did post on this yesterday that the Daily News is reporting that Woodson's under pressure from front office to bench Shumpert and start Kenyon Martin. You're looking at Pablo Prigioni, J.R. Smith, Carmelo Anthony, Andrea Bargnani, Kenyon Martin.
I mean, if anything's going to combat Josh Smith, it's going to be that. No, I can't. With the mess that the Knicks are right now, I just hope they pleasantly surprise me. I can't, in good faith, take them to cover anything.
Even against Detroit?
Even against Detroit. Detroit in Detroit? If they were in New York, I would think about it, but not in Detroit.
They've actually been worse at home.
Yeah.
It's a surprising thing. So.
Well, it's different when you have a smattering of fans like, oh, the Knicks, yeah, I should boo them, as opposed to when you have a whole arena of your home fans going, these guys suck, get them out of here.
A cacophony.
Yeah.
Of vitriol. I hate this line. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. The Miami Heat are favored by 9.5 at home versus Atlanta.
Ooh.
I hate it. I hate that line.
Oh, and Millsap. I feel like Millsap's a spread killer against the Heat.
I hadn't even thought about that. Ugh. I've got Miami.
Yeah, I'll go Miami because their offense is that good and the Hawks' defense is that shaky right now that I could see a blowout. But, yeah, I don't feel good about that.
It's just too high. If it was like 6.5, 7.5 even, I'd probably feel okay about Miami. But, you know, you're talking about a double-digit win for Miami. And Miami with Atlanta, there's only two ways it goes. Miami blows them out of the universe, just detonates them. Or it's a really close game.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I mean,
it's over-under 5, too.
Miami's had a couple of close home games this year with Dallas and with the Clippers, and then the Celtics had that win.
Yeah, no. You want the number? They're 2-4 as the home favorite.
Yeah.
ATS.
Yeah, I'd still go Miami.
Yeah. I don't like it at all. I'm not crazy. This is a trap. This is a blatant effing trap. The Rockets are favored by 10.5 versus the Celtics tonight.
Oh, that certainly is a trap, my friend. That is most definitely a trap. Oh my God. This Boston team was really bad in Minneapolis Saturday night.
They're back to the second. They're the second worst team in basketball.
They're not. They're exceptionally bad though.
Who is worse than them besides Utah?
Philly. Philly's not good. They had a
Philly
great
hung with the Mavs last night.
Fantastic.
On the road without Michael Carter Williams.
Fantastic. I can't believe they managed to crack the code that is Jose Calderon and Monte Ellis.
They have actual NBA players. Boston does not.
You got to stop this.
You've
got to stop this. You were wrong about the Knicks last year. You're wrong about the Celtics this year. You got to stop this.
Kelly Olynyk is not good. Vitor Favorani is not good. Those two are major players for them. Jared Sullinger might be their best player this year.
No. Avery Bradley's their best player. No, Jeff Green's their best player. That's not even close. Jeff Green's their best player. I'm still taking the Rockets to blow them out. But you got to stop. They're not the second worst team in basketball.
I firmly believe that they
Kings
are
worse.
The Kings I can understand an argument for. I can understand an argument for the Kings because I don't think the Kings are worse talent wise, but they just play like it.
The Nets and the Knicks are both worse right now. That you cannot deny.
I'm taking Houston, but I hate this. I just cannot.
I don't like either of those two games in terms of the line with the Heat game or the Rockets game.
I know that I'm screwed either way. This is definitely one of those. If I take the Rockets, the Celtics are going to give them a good what for and lose by only like 3 points.
Right.
And if I take the Celtics, it's going to be like, are you kidding me? Look at this team. Jordan Crawford's their point guard. No.
Hey, he's been playing some basketball.
He has been. He's been good. I shouldn't make fun of him. But
maybe Jordan Crawford's the best player.
Yeah, that might be true. That definitely helps someone's case. I like this one a lot. I like the Kings are favored by 2 at home versus the Suns.
Ooh. Oh, I like the Suns here.
Okay, that's the only one we're gonna disagree on. Sacramento is bad, and that's not really deniable. But the Suns have kind of started slipping a little bit.
They have, for sure.
And Sacramento at home is a different kind of – they are a different kind of team. They play a little bit better at home. They really should have won that Grizzlies game.
Oh, definitely. They didn't
because they're the Kings, but
– they probably should have won that Pistons game too.
Yeah. Like there's – I think that they're bad. Again, it's – they have talent. They're just remarkably stupid.
Sure.
If they would quit being stupid, they'd be a lot better. Like, there are teams that aren't – like, that's the thing is Boston is really – they're not stupid. That team is not stupid. Like, that's why they're competitive is because Brad Stevens has done a good job of having guys play within themselves. You know?
Yeah, he's harnessed the power of Jordan Crawford.
Like, if Brad Stevens was coaching the Kings, they'd be good.
I think, no, I don't know about that. I don't know that he's a better coach than Mike Malone. I think Mike Malone is trying to fix a much worse culture.
That's true.
And I think that it's just, it's harder to do, you know, with this little time.
DeMarcus Cousins is just driving me crazy. Just,
oh, that's
like,
new.
I'm not Zach Lowe level with him yet, but.
Yeah, that's new.
Well, that's the thing is I think that the extension was fine. I think that I've always said he's a really great player. I've said, you know, he doesn't have off-court issues, which that makes me crazy is that people talk about him being a problem, and I'm like, he doesn't get in trouble off-court.
That's true. That technically he was on the court when he threatened Sean Elliott.
Right. I don't understand why he will not take any responsibility and why he just seems so entitled.
Right. He's a 23-year-old man-child who has been given everything that he wants since people found out that he's really good at playing basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just like why – that's the thing is it takes a certain maturity and a certain self-awareness to be like, oh, maybe I don't deserve everything. Maybe I have to work for it. And not saying he doesn't work, but, you know, you got to – something's got to snap you out of that mindset. And it's probably for him going to be – if it happens, it's going to be years of losing and being ridiculed for losing.
Is part of it, do you have to at some level come to understand that as a star you're responsible for your teammates?
Yes, and I think that's the struggle for a lot of young guys, is realizing that, yes, you're doing your part, but your part actually extends past your own play.
Like, why is it, you know, I can understand, like, why is it my fault this guy blew a defensive rotation? Why is it my fault this guy missed a shot? My fault this guy keeps turning the ball over when I pass it to him?
Yeah, it's learning that you're not the focus necessarily of the team, but you're the focus of an attack. And I do think there is a difference there. I think that learning that your part of the offense exists to benefit everybody else is a huge thing to learn.
And I will say this, I don't like Kobe's approach to leadership. I always find it to be flawed and counterproductive. But anybody that plays with Kobe Bryant knows that he expects you to be responsible to him. He feels it's important that he makes it. And he got that real in 2008. That was kind of when he learned it. Was I have to be like I am responsible for my teammates. He always understood that they were responsible to him, but
right.
He had to learn that he was responsible to them as well.
Right.
That's. You know, I think Kyrie's kind of struggling with that.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a weird thing to like. It always seems like a weird thing to, especially when you're a young guy, to try to get older people to follow you, right?
I also think this is something that's kind of interesting about leadership inherently, is. So I'm bad at leadership, and I've been in a lot of leadership positions because I'm the kind of person that. I'm the kind of person that I get nervous when there's not a leader present, so I'm always like, well, okay, if somebody's got to do it, I'll do it. And I've been in a lot of those positions, and I failed horrifically many, many times. And I spent a lot of time like reading leadership books and trying to get better at these kind of things. And at a certain level, it's just inherent. Like I just understand like I'm never going to be great at it because it's just kind of inherent. But it's also really weird because leadership is one of those things. It's incredibly hard for people to know how to do it themselves, but you can – always spot it in other people.
For sure.
Good and bad. Like, you can always say, that's a bad leader, that's a good leader.
For sure.
And it's almost impossible for you to be able to see, I'm being a good leader, I'm being a bad leader.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely.
I feel like Wall gets it.
I think he gets it, too.
I was told that last year, apparently, there was some real trouble, and he was complaining and whining and being in a real pain, and then basically Emeka Okafor, like, got up in his face and was like, you're the all-star. You have to be the leader of this team.
Yeah.
And like that was the moment when everything kind of clicked for him.
Yeah.
So maybe I feel like DMC needs that. I'm just really surprised it hasn't happened with Chuck Hayes on the team.
Yeah, it does seem like – because DeMarcus is a big guy. Chuck Hayes will whoop his ass. If they really got into it, like Chuck Hayes is not a guy anybody wants to mess with. And that would – you know, maybe it just hasn't – I can't see how it hasn't come up yet. Maybe Chuck Hayes recognized how dysfunctional everything was and knew they had to wait until there was a system to believe in, you know?
Yeah. Leading scorer tonight. Who's going to have the most points in the NBA tonight?
Most points in the NBA tonight? I'm going to go Kevin Love. I'm going to go a homer pick.
I got a surprise for you.
Who is it?
Carmelo Anthony.
Look at you.
I think Melo scores 35 tonight in the loss.
Wow, okay.
Melo has been, he has tried to be a leader. He has played well. He has played within himself. He's gone in the post. I have no complaints about Carmelo Anthony this year. This Knicks disaster is not his fault.
Yeah. And by the way, now we've just guaranteed a 45-point game from LeBron.
I like how LeBron's hit that point in his career where Bird and Chamberlain kind of got to, where they realize that, what do I want to do? Like, I can do whatever I want tonight. Like, do I want to have 14 assists? Do I want to score 40 points? What do I want to do?
He's shooting 62%.
That sounds good.
On 16 shots. 62%. He's shooting 51% from three.
I'm doing this MVP thing for Baseline Awards today, and part of me realized last night, that's why I went to bed, is I was like, why am I even bothering?
I mean, I know Michael Beasley's running in the heels with 59%. But he's shooting 62%. That is stupid.
Before we go, did I tell you the Ty Lawson story?
I don't know. Is it one you can tell?
Yeah, this is one I can tell. You'll enjoy this. I wanted to tell you this is a Wolves fan. You should tell the Wolves involved in about this. So he got poked in the eye the other night. That was what I meant to mention this yesterday, yeah. Because you talked about Seabrew hitting Kyrie in the face. Well, he got Ty Lawson, poked him right in the eye on Friday night. And Ty was really hurting, like couldn't open his eye after the game. It was really swollen shut. And so I came over to him and was like, hey, man, I'm really sorry. I know that how painful that is. I had pink eye for 2 weeks. And he was like, 2 weeks? I was like, both eyes. Like, both eyes? He was like, damn. He was like, what happened? I was like, I have a 2-year-old. He's like, ah, there you go. Can't do that. But no, the best part, though, was I was like, are you all right? He's like, yeah, no, I felt it. And I immediately disinfected it because, you know, I know Seabrew. Yeah. I about died.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I about died.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic. Hey, before we go, I had a friend yesterday listening to the podcast, and I was flattered. And this friend said that they had nothing better to do. So I immediately tweeted out, tagline for EOB Pod, nothing better to do. And then I asked people to send theirs in. We've got some fun ones I thought we could end the show with. There's one that from at Halo Hales. If you need background noise while pretending to work, here you go. We got a lot of work ones because what else are you going to do? What else are you going to have on in the background while you're trying to look like you're working? That was from Shy Sports 41. Maybe my two favorites. This one from Shane T. Young. Remember the Basketball Jones? Yeah, we can't use that name either. That one was pretty fantastic. We had one from our friend Steve McPherson at Steve Ventress saying, can't get enough basketball talk? Now you can.
I like Trenton Jocks.
Yeah.
If you're too lazy to check Tara Reid's tweets yourself.
There was one from Tab027. I'm 72% sure it's about basketball.
Seems high.
We also had Aaron Gurness? Tara Reid is a gunner. Always a favorite. And then another, probably a good one to end it on, from at Cundy _ Mark, because I've already listened to all the Grantland podcasts. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Seth.